You're listening to Catch the Current, the latest podcast from Undercurrent News, your trusted source for seafood news, data, and prices. I'm Amanda Buckle.
And I'm Lauren Castiglione.
The countdown is on until the Boston Seafood Show next month. Lauren and I will be recording interviews live from the show floor, and you won't want to miss a single episode.
So subscribe and follow along your favorite podcast streaming platform. This week on Catch the Current, Amanda and I talked to Jason Smith, the author of Undercurrent's Top 150 Report, which highlights the world's largest seafood titans. Jason shares his insights from the must-have report that you'll definitely want to download.
But before we talk to Jason, Lobster Fest is back at Red Lobster, baby!
We're back! So give the people what they want and treat yourself.
Treat yourself. So the return of the fan favorite limited time event comes as prices for lobster tails and meat remain at elevated levels. However, sellers are still sailing into these levels, indicating demand remains strong.
The Lobster Fest menu reflects some of the changes made by Red Lobster's new CEO, like offering the menu in a variety of formats, which allows the chain to cater to customers at different price points. For example, a cup of Red Lobster's lobster bisque will set you back $6.99 with the opportunity to upgrade to a larger bowl. And come on, who else isn't going to do that? For an additional $2. Other low-priced options on the Lobster Fest menu this year include a lobster dip for $14.99 and a lobster flatbread for $16.49. Both menu items are made with a mix of both Maine and Langosino lobster.
So prices for entrees begin at $25.99 for the chain's lobster and shrimp linguine, which is also made from a mix of Maine and Langostino lobster, or for $32.99, a lobster roll served with warm melted butter on a sweet Hawaiian roll. The only way, in my opinion, to have a lobster roll, I'm going to make that statement there. You have to see this photo. It's the most beautiful lobster roll I've ever seen.
I know. Amanda sent it to me earlier in the week. She's like, we need to go get lunch right now.
That was the dream to be recording right in our local Red Lobster. hopefully next week we're recording right now during the middle of a snow day. We had 2 inches here in New Jersey. So
yeah. So we got to move it along. We got kids in the background. They're
alive. I know, but man, that lobster bisque would have been good today.
It would have.
But like a lobster that has shed its old shell, Red Lobster is entering its new shell era after a rather ugly 2024, which started with Thai Union Group, 25% owner of the company, announcing its intent to exit its minority stake in the chain. What followed was the closure, some very abrupt, of over 100 restaurants and the filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in May 2024.
And then the CEO, Jonathan Tebus, put the blame on former CEO Paul Kenny and Thai Union Group, arguing in court documents that a $20 endless shrimp promotion resulted in the restaurant facing significant losses. While the future of Red Lobster was looking grim, by September, a U.S. judge approved Red Lobster's plan to emerge from bankruptcy by agreeing to be purchased by an ownership group led by Fortress Investment Group.
Under the leadership of its new CEO, Red Lobster has instituted some changes, including debuting a new menu and a happy hour deal, as well as introducing $5 drinks. But the big head turner post bankruptcy is the return of the company's Lobster Fest and its new Create Your Own Lobster Lover's Dream entree.
The Lobster Lover's Dream has always been a Lobster Fest staple, but in 2023, the meal was uncustomizable. At the time, customers received two lobster tails, lobster and shrimp linguine with a baked potato side for $51.99. Fast forward past a $20 permanent endless shrimp promotion that ended with the company going bankrupt and subsequently welcoming a new 35-year-old CEO, the Lobster Lover's Dream is now $3 higher, yet at the same time attracting a wider audience.
One of the changes that I loved that the new CEO talked about a couple of times when he appeared in the media is that he wants to hit all these price points. He's not trying to knock everybody out, because when you hear, thinking seafood going out to dinner, it's going to be an expensive meal. And lobster is expensive, but at the same time, some might still balk at paying $54.99 for an entree at Red Lobster. The price of it, but it's just that's not what I want to spend right now. So what they're doing now is that they created a lower price point for their Lobster Lover's Dream. For $43.99, customers can choose two lobster selections instead of the three. So it's $43.99 versus the $54.99, which is interesting.
So as Undercurrent's lobster market reporter Gary Morrison noted, in recent trading weeks, cold water tails have moved slightly lower, However, it is not generally seen as a broader barometer of the market, but more a function of individual cash flow decisions. However, this is a time with all eyes on post-Valentine's Day needs, which are typically stronger when replenishment from the holiday is needed.
Happy Valentine's Day, Lauren.
Happy Valentine's Day, Amanda.
So Red Lobster is certainly hoping for some big wins with its Lobsterfest promotion. The timing is perfect, right? The seafood restaurant is forecasting a $51.8 million loss for its 2025 fiscal year, but a return to profitability in 2026. So Lauren and I will be doing our part to contribute there.
We sure will.
In our other big headlines from the week, India's Captain Fresh has acquired U.S. shrimp importer Ocean Garden Products via its Illinois-based subsidiary, Central Seaway, aka Sensi. So UCN founder Tom Seaman broke the story this week.
Sensi is a leader when it comes to Asian shrimp, while Ocean Garden has primarily focused more on Mexican and Ecuadorian shrimp. Sensi co-president Nate Torch said that the acquisition will allow the company to leverage the strength of their brand and product portfolio to provide a stronger basket and greater variety of products to its customers.
Co-president Jeff Stern added that the acquisition enables new market access while upholding core values.
We are preserving their legacy and enhancing it, ensuring that customers continue to receive the premium quality seafood they trust, now with even greater efficiency and broader offerings, said Stern.
It is crazy thinking about how much Captain Fresh has accomplished in the past year when you consider that Boston 2024 was really their big launch with Sensi. So now Captain Fresh is aiming for a $1 billion revenue in its financial year starting April, and the company's expansion projects, you know, truly impressive.
You can find a full transcript of this podcast, including links to additional coverage on undercurrentnews.com by searching Catch the Current. The big company news of the week goes to Royal Greenland, though, who fired CEO Susan Arfeld Rajamond from the position she's held since February 1st of 2023. During her span of 2 years with the company, Arfeld Rajamond oversaw a substantial restructuring and job reduction program across the group. However, a statement from the board said that due to challenges in several areas, its directors unanimously decided that the company requires a CEO with a different profile.
Full story from Neil Ramsden can be found in the story notes. Now, before we hear from Jason Smith on the top 150, we need to talk about this week's big water cooler stories.
My
first
favorite.
Yeah. Shrimp on treadmills. Lauren, hot take. Are you for or against spending $3 million on research involving shrimp running on treadmills?
Okay. This is a real question. Is this really happening?
So we have the full story on Undercurrent News. Search how fast can shrimp run on a treadmill. If you really want the answer, it's in there. It's pretty astounding. 20 meters per minute, 66 feet per minute, with little Wait, indication of fatigue.
Is there video?
There is video also, but so it sounds ridiculous, but if you actually look at this study that was conducted, they're trying to see the impact of climate change and other stressors on U.S. wild capture seafood.
They're doing a stress test on shrimp. Okay.
So they're testing these shrimp that are some were healthy, some were suffering from, you know, different diseases, and they just wanted to see like how they faced with increasing pathogens and other challenges. And it really is fascinating. And the title of the study doesn't say anything about, you know, shrimp on treadmills.
But that's what our headline says.
But that's Doge, you know, Elon Musk and his Department of Government Efficiency. They're looking into wasteful government spending, and they hooked onto this study that happened years ago. It actually went viral in 2008 on the Today Show. Kathy Lee Gifford and Hoda Kotb got to witness the shrimp in action. So it's just resurfacing now about wasteful government spending. It really is a shame because, like I said, it's if you look at the actual study, they're focusing on one thing, and it's, you know, kind of making it to seem like it's a gag. You know, how fast can shrimp run on a treadmill? But
and we are not helping matters.
No, maybe not. But I hope my story, I think, at least brings
right.
I think insight to like what the study is actually about. And what's also interesting, it was funded, they got the $3 million from a grant from NSF, the National Science Foundation. And NSF had to defend this study once before, and they said, you know, that shrimp and crab landings have been in decline since the mid 1990s, you know, because they're threatened by infection with bacterial, viral, and fungal pathogens. And so they said that in understanding marine ecologies is paramount to protecting the livelihoods of fishermen who depend upon the ocean's bounty.
And understanding that research is pivotal for our industry, 100%.
Yeah, so I, you know, DOGE is, you know, they're targeting these silly studies, and you know, and it's coming from NSF, but it is going to ultimately end up impacting commercial fishermen. So, you know, just one of the crazy headlines to erupt this week.
Right, what's the next one that you got for me?
Okay, our final water cooler story involves everyone's favorite, for lack of a better term here, celebrity couple. 72-year-old former football coach and 8-time Super Bowl winner Bill Belichick and his 24-year-old girlfriend Jordan Hudson. So it turns out that Jordan's one of us, a seafood gal.
Nice, love that.
Yeah. So she was partying with good old Bill in New Orleans for the Super Bowl this past weekend, and she was wearing an interesting outfit. She's always being photographed, and she decided to use that to her advantage, and she had with her a purse shaped like a lobster, and it had spelled out in black rhinestones, "Save Maine Fishermen."
A cause we can all get behind. Is she selling
Exactly.
merch yet?
So she said she got it on Facebook Marketplace, I think. So she's promoting this person who I guess I'm assuming is also within Maine. I think she was trying to also promote stuff within her home state, but I didn't realize as she her family are Maine fishermen. They used to own a business, but they bankrupt back in like the 2000s after the state closed down a bay to commercial fish shellfish dragging. So they fell on hard times. So she's actually been very vocal about, you know, local and state legislation and its impacts on the fishing communities, if you follow her online, which is for someone who's, you know, the media has a special fixation on her right now. And for her to be able to use her spotlight to shine a light on local Maine fishermen is kind of cool.
Yeah, good for her. That's
Yeah.
great.
I don't know what we're saving them from. She didn't like really clarify that. We're just saving them in general. I know they have a boatload of problems, but she hasn't clarified
Who
which
doesn't
one.
need saving right now, Amanda? Anyway, before we go, let's check in with Jason Smith about the new report you're immediately going to want to download, the top 150.
So what this report is, what this one is, our biggest ever. It goes to 451 pages. Basically, it's a massive research report. We've determined who the largest companies in the seafood business are, and we rank them by revenue being their, some of them are on different fiscal years, but we rank them on the 2023 revenue. So you really get a comparison of who the biggest players in the industry are, and we equate those figures to, you know, in their local currencies, we compute them as US dollars. So you get a ranking of who basically are at the top of the pyramid for the entire sector. And that includes basically harvesting, aquaculture, to further down to the supply chain in terms of processing and value added. In terms of so we have the ranking itself, and we have the entries. And the entries, so for each of the 150 companies that are listed, we have 1 to 3 pages of information about that particular company, about the changes that they have seen in the past year or so, and what's going on, and what's going to be their strategy moving forward.
And that's the bulk of the 400 plus pages that are included in this report. But what I really thank you for is including the visual breakdowns that we get that, you know, you can quickly and easily, you know, inform the readers with. We see that on the split of companies that are public versus private versus state-owned, those that are involved in aquaculture and wild fishing or both, as well as the revenue distribution and breakdown by country. So those I thought were super informative and great to kick off the report with. So this is the first edition of the Seafood Titans 150. Can you tell us how it differs from Undercurrent's previous top 100 reports, and why was it important to expand to that 150?
In 2012, we did our first of these reports, and we were trying to figure out who, because prior to Undercurrent really undertaking this exercise, it wasn't clear who the biggest players in seafood were. It's such a segmented industry, and you know, there's a lot of private companies, there's a lot of you know, companies that keep a low profile. So this exercise really began 12 years ago, and we've gotten to the point where for many years we did a top 100 report, but this year the decision was made because there's been a lot of changes since COVID. I mean, it's been a really dynamic couple of years for the seafood industry. And the more we looked, the more we decided that it was appropriate to expand the report further to the top 150 companies ranked by revenue.
Who do you see benefiting the most from this report? You know, is it primarily aimed at seafood companies? Are there other industries and stakeholders that can gain valuable insights from this giant undertaking that you took on this year?
So it's both. And one of the things I really like about this report, when it's finished, is the fact that, you know, it gives you that macro perspective, but it's also a very micro lens as well, because there's 150 different stories in here. So if you're a seafood company, if you're a seafood CEO, and you want to look and say, well, who are my relevant competitors and what are they doing? You can go to the folks who you think your competitors are, and you can read all about what they're doing. But you can also, you know, look at some of the broader trends affecting not just tuna suppliers, for instance, but say companies in Ecuador, for example, that, you know, where they've had some public safety issues that might be relevant to your business if you're, you know, selling aquafeed, or if, you know, if you're interested in buying Ecuadorian shrimp. So it really, you know, there's a lot of ways to dice up the information, but the way we've chosen to present it is in this kind of comprehensive view of the sector, while kind of preserving those micro opportunities.
Right. And I was just thinking that, you know, the seafood industry faces so many different challenges, especially throughout the supply chain. So there's no doubt that this report can help companies when looking to align themselves with opportunities in navigating challenges like that. And there's been so many mergers and acquisitions as of recent. So I think this report would be hugely valuable to the industry and looking for opportunities.
What I find interesting as well is it's folks who are in the fishy business, but it's also folks who are kind of seafood adjacent. So if you're an investment firm, or you're in private equity, or you're interested, you know, we've had in the past, we've had nonprofits who want to take a look at who the players are in the industry and, you know, gauge them on their sustainability. This is really, you know, one of those foundational research pieces that allows you to say, who should I even be looking at?
Right. And it's super interesting to see when you do have the full 150 list, you get a view at their change from the previous few years. So that's super interesting to see the growth that we've seen, or, you know, the fall in companies. But there's, you know, it's jam-packed with information. Can you tell our listeners, for those who are interested in diving deeper into the report, what's the best way to access it?
Sure. We on our reports page at Undercurrent News, you can there is a tab there, and you'd be able to look more about purchasing it, and someone would be able to assist you with that.
That's right. And we'll include a link back in our show notes, so that way you can easily access and download this report. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. That's it from us this week. Be sure to check the story notes page on undercurrentnews.com for links to more information on the stories we talked about today.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.